Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Coffee Clatch. The Coffee Clatch and Special Needs Talk Radio Network feature outstanding programming for the special needs community. Our team of hosts provide educational interviews. Our shows are not designed to provide listeners with specific or personal medical, legal, or professional service or advice. Parents of children with health issues should always consult their health care provider for medical advice, medications, or treatment. Any show discussing rights and law for special needs children and special education are presented as general information and not legal advice. Special Needs Coffee Clatch Limited does not promote any host or guest's individual practice, programs, treatments, or products. We thank you for joining us and are proud to provide excellence in broadcasting for the special needs community. And now, on to the interview.
Hi there. Are your kids struggling with reading and writing? Get them the support they need with Read and Write software for the desktop, Google, or iPad. These proven software solutions help those with reading and writing difficulties, learning disabilities, or English language learners. Read and Write Gold text-to-speech software provides tools for reading, writing, studying, and research for students while they work within the common applications they use every day. Learn how the Read and Write family of products can help your struggling student by visiting www.texthelp.com or call 888-248-0652. If you're ready to buy now, get 10% off when you buy on their online store with the Coffee Clatch code, and that is CK14SAVE10. That's CK14SAVE10. My name is Dr. Richard Selznick, and I want to welcome you to School Struggles. I'm proud to be a part of the Coffee Clatch team. And on School Struggles, we talk about a range of topics, including learning disabilities, dyslexia, special education, ADHD, and a whole host of other interesting topics that affect your child. I am a child psychologist and the director of the Cooper Learning Center, which is part of the Department of Pediatrics, Cooper University Healthcare, and we're located in Voorhees, New Jersey. I'm the author of two books, both published by Sentient Publications, The Shutdown Learner, Helping Your Academically Discouraged Child, and the more recently published book called School Struggles. And you can learn more about these at my website, www.shutdownlearner.com. And you can order those on Amazon and Barnes & Noble as well. I'm excited to have Dr. Steve Pfeiffer on the show tonight. We're going to be talking about a topic that is near and dear to much of what I do, certainly in my world, and I know many parents are struggling with this. We're going to be talking about writing disabilities. And Dr. Pfeiffer, Steve, is an internationally renowned speaker and author in the field of learning disabilities, and he has authored 6 books on learning and emotional disorders in children. Dr. Pfeiffer has 19 years of experience as a school psychologist and was voted the Maryland School Psychologist of the Year in 2008 and awarded the 2009 National School Psychologist of the Year Award. He is also a diplomate in school neuropsychology and a faculty instructor in the ABSNP School Neuropsychology Training Program. Dr. Pfeiffer currently works in private practice at both the Monocacy, if I'm pronouncing that right, I'm testing my decoding skills there, Steve, Neurodevelopmental Center in Frederick, Maryland, and Counseling and Treatment Associates in Bethesda, Maryland. He has authored 2 tests on diagnosing learning disabilities in children, both of which are slotted to be released in 2015. He can be reached at his email address is Pfeiffer, F-E-I-F-E-R, at Comcast.net. And his website to buy his books, both of which I have in front of, or 2 of the more recent ones I have, are great. www.schoolneuropsychpress.com. That's all one word. Now, just before, Steve, before I give you some time, I just want to tell listeners that this is a 2-part interview. The first one is going to end in about the 25-minute mark, and then we will be conducting a second interview that will be aired next Tuesday night. So we will be dividing this into two parts. If you would like to call in tonight for the first half only, you can call 646-595-2881, and I will do the best that I can to get you on. So, Steve, Dr. Pfeiffer, welcome.
Well, thank you, Rich. That was quite an introduction, and by the way, just flawless on your decoding skills.
Did I say that right?
Absolutely. Monocacy.
Oh, good. It's one of the few skills I've actually mastered in my life, decoding. I don't have too many other skills down, but the decoding skill I seem to have mastered, you know?
Well, you picked a pretty important one to master, so great to be with you tonight. Thanks for having me on.
I also want to put in a plug for Steve. I have been to two workshops of his that I've attended, and both one on reading disabilities and a second one on writing disabilities, and I go for my own, you know, development and continuing ed, and he does a really great job with a wonderful overview. So I certainly would encourage anyone out there listening to try and see him if you can, and listen, you know, and go on his webinars and his lectures. So Steve, give me a brief sense of yourself, your background, what you do, that kind of thing.
Well, I think you summed up quite a bit in the introduction, Rich. I did start off as a school psychologist, and after a couple of years in the field, personally, I was getting disillusioned because I found that all I was doing was giving IQ tests to kids and putting a number on them, which tended to put a label on them, and basically was giving justification for a child to get a little extra help by going across the hall. I really early on needed a bigger shovel to go digging a little deeper. Simply giving children IQ tests was not telling me enough about how they learn, and most importantly, how to inform interventions and help us select the proper interventions for kids. So very early on in my training, I sort of deviated and jumped into a neuropsychology training program, which, you know, for my own personal needs, I just thought it was fascinating, and then probably ever since have tried to take what's going on in the neurosciences and act as a bridge in a way and try to bridge some of that insight into the world of education to help kids learn. And that's really where the emphasis of my career has been, is taking a neuropsychological or brain-based perspective to help kids learn, whether it's through my speaking or writing or clinical practice. That's always been my focus.
I was thinking as you were saying, well, maybe you can hire me, Steve. I've given one too many IQ tests in my life, I think. So,
so well, maybe it would be an honor to work with you. And I continue to give IQ tests all the time.
Yeah.
I just ask a little different question.
Yeah.
I stopped asking, how smart are you, and ask a different question, how
are you
smart?
Right. I think that's, you know, that I don't work in the schools, and I have, in a sense, the luxury of being able to interpret the IQ test in the way that I think that you also, I've heard you speak about, you know, different aspects of the cognitive assessment. So, you know, I think we would be on the same page with that. So tonight we're primarily talking about the writing process, although maybe if we have some time, we could also discuss some about reading. But I thought we'd take for the first part of this, take a different angle. Rather than dive into the disability side and rather than dive into, you know, what isn't working, let's take a scenario with someone who writes well. Let's say a typical third or fourth grader, or maybe a little bit older. You know, someone who, you know, you give them what I always refer to as open-ended writing. You give them that assignment, and they do it fine. Everything's working. What are the elements that work positively for someone who doesn't have a writing disability?
Yeah, it's a really good question because writing is very complex, number one. And number two, there are different genres of writing. And some kids could be good at one genre and not so good at another. For example, in school we have a lot of objective writing to explain an event, and that could be differentiated from more prosaic or narrative or personal writing to convey a personal experience. If there's one central skill, no matter what the genre is, it's something we call executive functioning skill, in my opinion. And executive functioning is a nice, big, fancy word that at the end of the day, I think, really is about how you self-organize verbal information for the purpose of putting it down on paper. I mean, we all have a lot of thoughts swimming around in our heads. How do we capture those thoughts and coherently deliver them on paper so someone reading them can get a good grasp of not just what we're thinking, but also and what we're intending to communicate, but in a way that abides by conventional standards of the English language. So it is relatively complex. If you had to pin me down and say, well, what's the one skill that good writers seem to have, I'd say it's good executive functioning.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you. Excuse me, and I think that, you know, as you could appreciate, and I know that you know in your practice, you try to translate this data to parents so that they understand it. You know, and I find trying to explain, you know, the executive function. I was doing it this morning to a parent about her young boy, and, you know, sort of explaining it as almost like a fuel line or a battery that was low in this particular child and that he didn't have much to draw upon then to do that writing process that's being asked of him. Is that one way that you might say, or how do you explain it to parents? Is that in line with how you do it?
Yeah, I might need to steal that phrase, if you don't mind, down the road.
I've got them all copyrighted. You better be careful there, pal.
Okay. I know where to find your book, so they might be in there as well. But I think so. I think we throw these terms out, these fancy psychological terms, like executive functioning. Mm-hmm. And I've always said, if someone says, my kid has an executive functioning issue, you know, the natural response should be, you know, they're not telling you anything. What kind? It's such a broad, based type of construct. What exactly are you talking about? And, you know, in the world of writing, it affects different academic skills in different ways, but in the world of writing, it's really, you know, the strategies that we're going to use to self-organize that information, because we're going to deliver this in a certain manner. And that manner is going to be pretty slow. Paper and pencil transcription is a slow way to deliver our thoughts. It's not like speaking. I'm probably going a mile a minute right now, but writing is slow, it's deliberate, and it is complex, and it's, you know, at the end of the day, how well organized is the information to deliver on paper?
If parents were not to be, let's just say they were to get their almost standard psychological, that a special education team, child study team, whatever it may be, would they help them to guide them as to where they would be looking in the report? So, for example, I know that when I start to see scores are below, let's say, 8 on the active working memory section of the psychological portion of the test, that to me starts to feel like, uh-oh, we've got some potential executive function problems here. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, I think that's kind of where we start. Oftentimes what parents will see, and I think this is frustrating for everyone involved, is the testing that we do is we give it an achievement test of written language. And there's many of them out there. And you might come back and you might use a metric like the student scored 85 in their writing, or the student scored a third grade level in their writing. Or at the end of the day, basically you're saying this is where they scored in their writing, and maybe they're below grade level. And everyone will look around and say, yeah, we kind of knew that going in, but why are they below? That's our central question. Not always where. Where is important. But the why. So when you start to look at things like working memory, to use your analogy, now we're going beyond just where a student scored. We're trying to determine why, and that working memory component, that's a great place to start.
And is that, it strikes me too that it's one of the reasons, I know that the schools will, I hear over and over, well, they're giving OT, they're giving occupational therapy to address writing. Now, hear me, if anyone is an occupational therapist out there, I greatly value what you do. I'm not criticizing occupational therapy when I say what I'm going to say, but I think that that's one level of addressing the writing problem, and it doesn't necessarily get at these issues that you're talking about.
Well, the first thing we talk about with intervention, is it a true intervention or is it an accommodation? Now, occupational therapy, I think, is a wonderful type of intervention to help with the motoric end of writing for
mm-hmm.
the kids.
Right.
And we talk about in our book about three types of different written language disorders, and one of them is just struggles with the motoric end, manipulating a pencil. And that's where occupational therapy can be of great value and benefit, and we wholeheartedly endorse it. But more often than not, it goes a little bit beyond just the motor output. It has to do with intrinsically how we're self-organizing our thoughts and our language and our ability to retrieve that language, hold it. I think working memory, a better term sometimes, is holding it. Can you hold those thoughts long enough to get it out on paper? One of the things you talked about earlier is what should I be looking for, let's say on a psychological, if working memory is below 8, should I look for that? Absolutely. But another thing we look for is processing speed. And if your speed of output is pretty slow, well, that puts a lot of pressure on working memory to hold those thoughts long enough to get them out on paper. And if you're a kid who's a little distracted, if you're a kid a little on edge with some anxiety issues, if you have anything that might take your eye off the ball, so to speak, chances are you're going to lose those thoughts before you can get everything out.
It's interesting what you say about processing speed. I think that both of those are very important in that regard. But I find parents, and I don't know if the WISC is going to be revised, I really hope they change the name of processing speed, in part because I find parents coming in and saying, well, you know, I see that he's got a processing deficit. He doesn't take in information very well. And I'm like, well, yeah, but on this particular test, processing speed is assessing their paper and pencil processing speed, their ability to kind of use, you know, to process visual information with their pencil and translating. It's even hard to explain it, you know. So I find parents confused by the whole term processing speed, you know.
A lot of terms in our profession that are very, very confusing, and that is certainly one of them, because it's looking at one aspect of processing speed, and it's more the output, you know, how quickly you can throw something down.
And paper and pencil output.
Down on paper, absolutely, yeah.
You know, I'm already feeling the pressure of the clock going down in terms of our talk. So I want to really emphasize, I think you have a great model in your book, and Steve's book is called The Neuropsychology of Written Language Disorders. It's a great text. And the model, I find it very helpful, because I find people, you know, coming in and asking about dysgraphia, and it has helped me to think in terms of these three different categories. So in the say, 8 minutes we have left here, apparently, Steve, what can you allow, you started with the... Go through the three different models of dysgraphia for us so that people out there can really understand them in very basic terms.
Sure, and we can do it in far less than 8 minutes. So what we talk about, we tried to pull together a lot of research in neuropsychology and education and just kind of plainly say, you know, there's three basic breakdowns in the writing process. And when I talk to psychologists and educational diagnosticians, I try to say, if you just say someone has a learning disability, it's too broad, it's not specific enough. If you say if they have a learning disability in writing, okay, we call that a dysgraphia, but let's take it a step farther. What type? We talk about three subtypes. The first is called graphomotor dysgraphia, and if you don't like that term, don't use it. Say basket number one. But that's basically kids, and we've talked about this earlier, who have difficulty with the motor output response, manipulating a pencil. An occupational therapist would have great impact here, but what else would have impact here?
So let me just hold on, Steve. So, so I just want to make sure that, so this is number one, we'll call it basket number one, the graphomotor. So this is more, I just want to punctuate. So in a sense, this is fundamentally a fine motor problem. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. And, you know, these are the kids who are struggling to manipulate that pencil, so they're going very, very slow, and therefore it needs more of a motor-based intervention, such as an occupational therapist.
And that particular child may not, which I know you're going to get to in a second, they may not have other things such as a reading disability or a broader-based learning disability, right? It's more like an isolated form of a writing problem.
That is correct. They don't necessarily have a dyslexia or other type of language-based learning disabilities. It's more on the motor side. And some have argued, Rich, that because we don't teach handwriting anymore in our schools, and if you look at the Common Core curriculum, nowhere within the writing core does it say, here's how you teach writing. Some have argued that we're grooming kids in this direction because we no longer teach them the proper strokes to make.
Right, right. There's a lot of that going on in a lot of different areas.
Second subtype we talk about of writing issues, okay, here's another one of those fancy psychological terms, dyslexic dysgraphias. And the dyslexic dysgraphias are a big fancy term that says you've got spelling issues. Really what your core problem is you're dyslexic. You struggle with reading. And we know children who struggle with reading quite often have difficulty in their writing, and it surfaces more often than not in their spelling. And within the dyslexic dysgraphias, we have different styles or breakdowns of spelling miscues. I mean, some kids who really struggle to decode, the most common type of dyslexia, for example, fourth grade kid reading at a first grade level, because they can't decode, they can't mechanically crash through the words, well, guess what? They spell in that fashion as well. They leave sounds out when they spell, just like they leave sounds out when they read.
And
so that
they
would
also
be...
Sorry, go ahead.
So that would be our first, you know, kind of example of a dyslexic dysgraphia, the kids who aren't spelling properly because they're omitting sounds.
Now, those kids, beside the omitting of sounds, my impression is that they also have tremendous difficulty with writing of sentences. Is that also part of the dyslexia dysgraphics?
Exactly, for a number of reasons. A lot of these guys, and I'll just pick one, you know, kids recognize, look, I don't spell very well. So you have a tendency to only select words that are in your wheelhouse, that you're comfortable spelling. And you select words from a very truncated list, and quite naturally your sentence structure is pretty... it's pretty vanilla, and it's pretty simplistic because you don't want to go out of your comfort zone because of your spelling issues.
Right, right. So it sort of has, in a sense, a self-limiting aspect to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we talk about a couple of other different, within the world of dyslexic dysgraphias, something called surface dysgraphia. Again, it's a spelling issue, but these are the kids who sound out everything fine. That's not an issue. Every sound you hear, they can represent in their spelling. The problem is really the English language. The problem is that in this language, among our 44 phonemes, we have one out of every four words that's phonologically irregular. Rich, I cannot explain why knock starts with the letter K or why onion doesn't start with the letter U. We have a lot of words like yacht or debt or laugh, that the only way we can spell those words correctly is we have to visualize them in the mind's eye. And these are the kids who lack that ability to visualize what these words are. You don't know that a G is in laugh unless you've seen it before, and you have to draw upon that visual spatial representation. So at the end of the day, to be a good speller, you got to hear the sounds, you got to visualize the words, and you got to do them both. And if something's lacking, we're going to have some issues in the spelling process.
Now, was that the third type, or is there one more coming?
There is one more coming. So I'm still talking about within the world of dyslexic dysgraphias. That was our second subtype, just spelling issues. Some kids more difficulty with the sounds. Some kids can't visualize the words, and then some kids can't do both. The third subtype and final subtype of dysgraphias are not kids with motor output problems, not kids with spelling issues. This is really the most common type of written language issue we see, and it's something we call executive dysgraphias. These are the kids, this is what's the most common complaint from teachers and parents is, my child just doesn't give me much on paper. In a discussion, they have so much to say, rich knowledge, very articulate, that the knowledge is there, but then I ask them to put it on paper, we don't get very much on paper. And the reason is... the fundamental problem, poor executive functioning skills, difficulty self-organizing that information to put down on paper. And that third basket, that's probably the most common, the executive.
Right, and that's the one that probably overlaps a lot with the inattentive subtype of ADHD, right?
You are 100% correct. And I'm sure, Rich, in your work, when you have kids with ADD, ADHD, when you look at their academic performance, if there's one skill that they really struggle with, it tends to be with written language.
All right, gang, Steve, I knew the time would fly by. So we are going to say our goodbyes tonight. However, if you liked what you heard, and I hope you did, and Steve has a lot to say, he's going to, in the second part of the interview, he's going to talk about interventions, accommodations, 504 plans, that kind of thing. So that show will air next Tuesday night in the same time slot, or you can pull it up on iTunes or at the Coffee Clatch website. So I want to say goodnight to Steve and to others, and I invite you to visit my website, www.shutdownlearner.com and thecoffeeclatch.com, and visit our sponsors, Read and Write Software. And Steve, thank you very much, and I look forward to the second portion of our interview.
I do as well. Thanks for having me, Rich.
Take care, Steve. Good night.
Good night.